Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. You know the phase, the one where you're going back and forth between your place and your partner's, and you have to bring all your stuff with you. But when is it time to make a change? Deanna Clevesy writes about that question in her essay, Security in a Bright Yellow Suitcase. It's read by Christina Hendricks. She starred as Joan in Mad Men, and you can see her now in Good Girls on NBC.
On more than one occasion, I have rolled my bright yellow carry-on suitcase into the office on a Monday morning to the confusion of my coworkers. "Where did you go this weekend?" they would ask. "The Hamptons?" "No," I would reply. "95th and Broadway." My suitcase contains little pots of beauty products, sample-sized toothpaste, and my shampoo in TSA-approved 3-ounce bottles. I have a folding hairdryer, folding toothbrush, and a folding dop kit to keep everything organized. My heels and sneakers complement each other's shape in one corner of the suitcase, with my delicate blouses tightly rolled in the other, as I must be prepared for morning meetings, happy hours, dinner plans, and snuggle sessions. Ultimately, I aspire to pack everything I need without suggesting that my boyfriend is my everything. When our relationship began, I would arrive at his place with a nonchalant canvas tote, shoving in cheap, wrinkle-proof dresses for the next day, as if our sleepovers were accidental. Eventually, I graduated to a larger tote that I used to carry groceries. It has a 50-pound weight threshold, enough for several outfits, my makeup bag, a pair of shoes, and my dignity. More recently, I transitioned to the yellow carry-on, what I call my rolling suitcase of inferred permanence, which has been a tactical delight with its capacity and portability, aside from the notorious clack of its wheels as I approach his apartment or leave mine. My neighbors must assume I am constantly catching flights to more exotic locations than my boyfriend's walk-up apartment. Each passing month silently confirms that he and I are heading towards permanence. My little shampoo resides next to his oversized body wash, like a petite and confident counterpart. I have my own towel that I place on a hook adjacent to his after each use. My razor has found a cozy spot in the shower rack. My book club pick sits atop his desk, ready to serve as refuge when I'm tired of watching his favorite Bollywood movies. I once lived with a previous boyfriend, mixing our possessions with hope as I relocated from New York to Miami, his city of the moment. I shopped for decorations that weren't overtly female, settling for shades of royal blue that reminded me of the ocean that almost kissed our backyard. I dressed the bed in fresh linens and golden yellow throw pillows to add a touch of contrast, which he never understood. I found a beautiful tray for him to neatly place his keys and the contents of his pockets when he got home from a long day. I painted a canvas above our bed with childlike enthusiasm. The same canvas that eventually found itself propped against the dumpster when, a year and a half after we moved in together, our relationship ended. Bound by a lease and messy emotions, we remained together for months as I combed the apartment thread by thread, unraveling the items that were mine, his, or ours. The espresso machine could be his, I guessed. He really did love it. But the rest of the kitchen stuff was mine, assuming wherever I landed next would have a proper kitchen in need of my ever-growing collection of witty coffee mugs. He could keep the television. It couldn't fit in my car anyway. Our books mingled on our shared shelf. My possessions peppered his desk drawers. I took portions of our brief life together, put them in boxes, and loaded them in my car. A fraction of a memory in the front seat. A sliver of disappointment in the back seat. I left our place with the bed made and the throw pillows he hated so much, fluffed and sitting tall, to serve as an insulting reminder of me in his bed. I think of that past as I make timid movements towards a new life with someone else. This time, I have made it easy to round up my things and leave quickly. Always one bag away from walking out the door. A few months ago, I did just that. In a storm of anger and insecurity, I gathered my things in a well-organized frenzy. He called me back to the apartment as I waddled away with my bag of clothes, toiletries, and used Tupperware. As I stepped into a cab, he ran out to the sidewalk, bewildered by the ease in which I was running away. In an instant, I was gone. For me, there was comfort in that, in having nothing to tie me down. Nothing too big to remove at a moment's notice should we decide we don't want this anymore. There is no painted canvas hanging over our bed. Only a travel-size shampoo in his shower that serves as an act of hope for one more day. Just like the one before, and the one before that. Unlike me, my boyfriend is an eternal optimist. He is unscarred and without a broken heart to reference. As I leave each item behind with hesitation, he welcomes it with confidence. His enthusiasm is both endearing and naive. If he only knew how hard it was to piece my life back together after I returned to New York City from my breakup, my life divided. And here I am, either a total fool or a total romantic. Dividing it all back up again. With each passing day, he has tried to make tiny declarations of comfort with our merging lives. The almond milk he bought just for me sits like a trophy in the refrigerator, his reminder to me that I'll be back. Graceful evidence of our relationship can be traced back to me through a collection of my pink socks in his drawer, my earrings by his bedside, right up to my extra pair of heels he left for me by the front door. As my bag gets lighter, I must admit my anxiety about our transient romance has eased too. Just when I began to feel settled, he traveled home to India for a month. I returned to my apartment for the first time in a long time and emptied my belongings from my tote. My laundry had been haphazardly attended to and was piling up against my bedroom wall. The food in my refrigerator seemed disappointed in my lack of concern for its condition, seemingly aware that I had been cooking in someone else's kitchen. I unrolled my sweaters, refound a phone charger that had been lost at the bottom of my layers, and started to put my things back in their proper place. But the proper place didn't seem to be all that exciting anymore. As weeks went by, I counted down the days until he returned. I spotted women on the train making the trek to and from their overnights, feeling like a defector from the tribe. I felt naked with my little purse that held nothing more than a lip balm and a few credit cards. At times, I would have this overwhelming sense that I had forgotten something, only to realize it was my suitcase that I was missing. The exasperating appendage that I had cursed over the past year had also become my security blanket. Knowing that its presence meant he was on the other end of my journey. One night, I found his undershirt in my laundry. It had somehow landed in my clothes during the crossfire nights between his place and mine. It smelled like his laundry detergent. I felt an immediate yearning to find my suitcase that had been recuperating in the calm of my closet and fill it with a weekend's worth of clothes. There was nothing appealing about my dresser drawer anymore. I wanted him to come home. And I wanted to be waiting for him, annoying bag and all. He flew back on my birthday, the same day I was flying back from a trip to San Francisco. My yellow rolling suitcase reacquainted itself with his oversized duffel in the kitchen as he held me in his arms, his chest smelling like somewhere I had never been. "I have a birthday gift for you," he said, as he unloaded packages from his closet. The wrapping paper was covered in traditional Indian print, pops of pink and blues intertwined with shimmering gold. And inside was a purse, a purple canvas satchel covered with the image of an elephant. My mother helped me pick it out, he said. It fit only the essentials, my lip balm, credit cards, and an extra pair of underwear, just in case. It was a fraction of the size of my usual overnight tote and incapable of holding multiple outfits. It had no wheels, nothing close to a 50-pound capacity. But just like him, it had traveled across the world for me, much farther than my commutes across Manhattan. It seemed as if he just wanted to take the weight off my shoulders. So I let him.
Christina Hendricks, reading Deanna Clevesy's essay, Security in a Bright Yellow Suitcase. We'll catch up with Deanna after the break.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
Deanna Clevesy actually has a new last name now. She's going by Deanna Patrice because there's been a big change since her essay came out in 2016.
So, spoiler alert, we got married. We got married 3 months ago in India, where he's from. So it was a happy ending. So it worked out for all.
But Deanna told us that the relationship almost didn't get started. She was using a dating app.
At the time, they only gave you 10 matches a day. And if you didn't swipe left or right on any of those 10 matches, they kind of stayed in your pool until you went through them. And I was at work, and I had barely any service, and none of the profile pictures loaded. They were gray boxes. And I said, all right, yes, 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 so that I could get to the next batch, essentially. And so when we matched, he immediately reached out and said, hey, would you like to meet up? And his profile picture was horrible.
Deanna almost didn't go on that date, but her friend convinced her otherwise.
So I showed up with no makeup on, no heels, nothing like I would normally do for a first date. We met in Madison Square Park, and he came through the park, and he was so handsome. And I was shocked and all of a sudden so self-conscious. And that was really that. We saw each other four times, I think, that week. And he actually proposed in Madison Square Park where we met.
But Deanna says that she and her husband had to negotiate some challenges.
Living and being in an interracial relationship across these cultures is very complex, and it can be really difficult. But I feel like neither one of us ever thought that there was another option. It just had to be. It just had to be us.
And that meant finally unpacking her suitcase. Deanna told us about the questions she asked herself as she was making that choice.
What's the larger risk here? What do I have to lose? I think at the beginning, I didn't have much to lose. It was, okay, if you don't want me, I'm out. I felt a lot of power in that. But then as the relationship progressed, it was like, what do I have to lose? A lot. Like, if I keep on resisting this relationship, if I keep on making it so easy for me to run, if I keep on making this a temporary thing, I have a lot to lose now. I will lose him.
Deanna still has the yellow suitcase, although she says it's a little dilapidated these days.
I don't know what I will do when I really have to retire the yellow suitcase. I've joked about turning it into a piece of furniture or, like, hanging it up somewhere. I don't know. I feel like the yellow suitcase represents a lot of hardship and strength and the journey that we've had together. And I don't think I'll ever really let it go.
That's Deanna Patrice. She's a writer and poet based in New York City. We've got more from Dan Jones and Christina Hendricks after the break.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
Here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
What I love about Deanna's essay is this sense of how she was, you know, she had her heart broken and found it hard to extract herself because her stuff was all combined with her ex's stuff, and how she decides that she's going to be like a turtle carrying her own pack on her back, and she's going to be this self-contained unit. It speaks to how independent we try to be and how self-protective we try to be, especially after heartbreak. And, you know, not being vulnerable means carrying everything that you need with you and not spreading yourself into another person's life until you're sure that that's going to work.
And here's Christina Hendricks.
I loved her sense of humor. I thought she seemed like she was talking to a friend. I liked that she seemed sensitive and scared and vulnerable and sometimes snarky all at once, because I think we can be. So I thought she was really wonderful at putting a voice to an essay that sounded like a conversation and it made it really fun to read.
Thanks again to Christina for reading this week's essay. You can see her in Good Girls on NBC. Next week, Isabelle Huppert.
Finally, I leveled with him. I told him he had written what I took to be a love poem, and in doing so, had stepped over the line. He defended himself, saying the poem was an attempt to make me more emotionally committed to my therapy. I want to get you into therapy, not into bed.
And this week, we've got a little news. For us, it's really sad. But for him, it's amazing. John Parati has been with Modern Love since its beginning and has worked on each of the 145 episodes that we've released. His incredible ear and perfectionism have shaped everything about the way this podcast sounds. He's stood out in a Boston winter recording the sound of music coming out of a car stereo, recorded high-heeled boots in a garage, and fought with his co-producer about exactly which train whistle sound to use in an episode, because, you know, those are the details that matter. He's directed actors and written scripts. He's dealt with me when I can't read those scripts or I insist on editing them again, and he has never held back from telling us when something sounded bad and how to make it better, because he has made everything that we do better. And more important, John is a genuinely good human being. All of those high standards come with a great heart and patience. John's a really rare combination of everything you'd hope for in a colleague and friend. And now John is off to an exciting new adventure. We will miss him so much. So we wanted to send John off with a special goodbye. Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, Caitlin O'Keefe, and for a triumphant final time, John Parati. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.